Yeah, I think that works. Cool. All right. Hey, for all of you that came out tonight, I greatly appreciate just seeing a lot of friendly, familiar faces and just, you know, I think we all appreciate having an audience. So thank you. Thanks to Joan and Chris for all of your tireless efforts, keeping Hemingway's humming and just being such a top-notch reading series that just embodies so much of what Pittsburgh and poetry and the writing community is all about. So gratitude to you folks, to Don as well for everything that he's doing. So I'm just going to read a couple from my book and then move into some new things and go from there. So the first poem I'm going to read is actually, I was going to read something else, but the person that I kind of dedicated it to didn't show up, so they're not going to have a poem read for them. But as Don and I were talking a little bit, he reminded me of this poem. So it's called Punk. I keep embarrassment in a stash, stacked and piled like yellowed news in cracked plaster rooms, off behind the kitchen table of my mind, a place to visit my drunken faux pas, file away the fuck-ups, and feel bad about the time I hit an old woman in the mouth with a jar full of maraschino cherries. Sometimes I thumb through to that time when Leo and I were 16, and we sat parked for hours in front of the Electric Banana, a punk club we'll never go inside, out of fear our night might end with a busted nose from a swirling mosh pit full of knees. Our missed chance to stomp and bleed and on a sticky dance floor still jangles like loose change in a pocket full of sad attempts to fit in. But it's only after Leo's blonde hair is lost to glue and malt liquor in a botched attempt at dreadlocks, after he buzzed it close to the skull and we lose touch, that I'll come to know so well those minor threat cassettes that click in a dusty Delco tape deck while we watch the Iron City punks loiter about the Banana's front door in their comfortable mohawks and effortless combat boots. Marooned and sober behind a foggy windshield, a lush hillside fails to take shape, and I find that decades later, I am a cell full of deeds undone, going places where so much is an idling Chevy with a paint job the color of contusion. And this next one's for my wife, who I'm just grateful for every day. Do you know what it means to miss New Orleans? By the time that plate shatters its jagged slice from my hand and medics kick apart our rotted French doors, hoping they can staunch the flow before rolling us, red-lit and howling across Canal Street, we'll find our days numbered in the city, gritty with want, blaming the hooch and yayo for leaving us raw-scraped and licking our lips numb as another dawn inches its way over. It was something to first feel the way heat climbs into every fold here, the pavement sizzling while a sax man sweats through another sugary cover, busking on sidewalks hosed down each morning after being painted by tourists ripped from the potent rum slush plied on every corner. When we skip town, all we leave of ourselves adds up to carnival beads and bloodstains, an unpaid lease, that neighbor's Hoover we borrowed, then broke. And in the quarter's wet cement, our initials still drying. So besides some of these poems that maybe some folks haven't heard before, this is actually the first time I'm going to actually wear glasses in public because, you know, that type of thing happens, and I'm up here like squinting away, like you do have a tool for that. So we'll give this a try. So I suspect, like some of you folks, going out to see live music can be an awful lot of fun. One of the more fun things, not only the live music, but is the people watching, which can oftentimes be really interesting. So a few years ago, my wife and I were at the Byam Theater for a show by the Brooklyn band called Antibolus. Great band if you haven't checked it out. So the title is At the Antibolus Afrobeat Concert, Byam Theater, Pittsburgh. On a Wednesday night, all it takes to make latecomers scurry is a 12-piece rumbling to life. Bouncing notes all over this polished wood palace, decked in marble stairs and brass rails, where grooves begin as thrum beneath dimming house lights, and an oldster sits front row, sporting the faded jeans and white sneakers worn in Elks clubs everywhere. He nods along, ball-capped and cirrus-haired, fist-pumping to bass lines with blue-eyed delight, in a hall full of toes tapping. When the band strikes first chords in its song about greed, he's the only one who stands. Rocking to the beat on stiff-bowed legs, right hand held aloft, winding his way up polyrhythm's river, until an usher cups her palms to his ear, asks him to be seated. Instead, he draws sawbucks from his pocket, wads them with joy, each toss delivered towards stage, graceful and arcing as an ephus. For anyone that's unfamiliar with an ephus, it's a baseball pitch. It's like a big lobbed pitch. So sorry, probably should have pointed that out. I biked to class, and especially whenever I was teaching downtown, for some reason I love alleyways. I don't know what it is about dumpsters. And just some of the weird stuff, the graffiti, people hanging out, and oftentimes cutting through Springway, I would see people that were out catching a smoke, having coffee, whatever. Restaurant workers typically, like myself, and so I thought those folks deserved a poem. So it's called Shift Meeting. Shift meeting is the thing that happens before your restaurant shift and is basically the most useless waste of time ever. But nevertheless, it often feels like it just needs to be done. One sparrow crow hops around a toss of stale Mancini's as apron servers ready for another night's dinner surge, a clutch of them crouching above warm asphalt, dishing among the stink of three-day-old fish, rimming this alleyway behind Roland's, the ooze from the dumpster topping one pothole until it's a milky cataract, blurring the echo of blue-eyed sky granted this narrow track. Blowing clouds of smoke, they wait for the pissy chef to show with his clipboard, while just inside, a party of fussy-faced women wait to be seated. Their checks will be separate. Their needs all hurry. One of the great things, thank you, folks. One of the great things about working in restaurants is not only just getting to be around food and drink as things that I love quite a bit, but actually it's about the people. Not only the people that you wait on, but the people that you work with, the people that you kind of come across. So I found that I've just been writing a lot about people over the past few years. And so Keith Stebler is our longtime piano player at Revival on Lincoln, where I currently work. And I just felt that Keith, who's about that tall and is in the Pittsburgh Jazz Hall of Fame, deserved a poem. So this is for Keith. The subtle art of dinner music. Even as another purpled sunset curtains this bistro's leaded windows, letting dinner talk turn to hush while we pour red wine with a burble, none of us can recall when our glass-eyed piano man became the lucky piece we fist bump at the threshold. Tonight, with one hearing aid gone to shit, he sips another cold coffee, cocking his head toward a speaker, streaming some ballad he'll name in a grumble, hailing us with swollen knuckles before asking for one of our black sleeves, letting us guide him like a grounded songbird, his free hand a wing searching for the gray edge of his coddled Casio, tucked and waiting for his touch among the velvet wallpaper and roasted garlic perfuming the air. Though some dub this gig as crowd control, it'll take him fiddling a speaker wire to catch a bark of feedback before Stormy comes greased from the keys, its melody ushering one husband to whisper into his wife's ear, making her giggle as he reaches to cup her warm hand in his own. Mostly, our soloists resist the old mantra, the faster you play, the faster they eat, in favor of mid-tempo numbers, bantering with the crowd while we clear plates and top waters before he strolls through standards and show tunes muddled with age. The stopper, a dusty Hello Dolly, arriving on schedule, his thin voice straining to channel the gravel of Satchmo, tip jar flurried with five spots. After midnight, when the place empties, a bag of leftovers swings on his forearm as he white canes his way across Lincoln Avenue. The light blinking orange, the magnet of wherever it is he calls home, pulling him through the October air. All of us warmed by what we've downed together. Another stray bottle left open to breathe. I'm just going to wrap up with two new poems. This one I've never actually read before, so we'll see how it goes. It's for my dad. Peaches. By night, Dad would settle ugly into his favorite silence, letting his lit cigarette grow its long ash until our living room became dusted with finger trails. His long slide beginning cross-legged on the love seat, book in lap, the front door stickered with a pint-sized flag declaring love it or leave it. And like a red-tailed hawk, spread-winged and keening just above the pitched roofs in Pittsburgh, his birth month passes, wrapped in this foggy heat, making long days river into a bruised brandy wine, the spider-spun drag line, one forehead prickled with sweat, that I'll guilt over buying a half peck of freestones, their thin skin the color of sunset, is to recall those last months when all he could do was mouth for a sticky last bite, as if half a Red Haven palming its creamy yellow flesh would have been enough to save him from February frosting over his hospital windows, a place where all to be had was a memory of his from long ago, a bowl of milky cornflakes floating with all he might have needed to steal him for what had followed. And this last poem is for my mom, which I did get to talk to her on Mother's Day. That just passed, but somehow this poem goes from her to being about me, but nevertheless. In the waiting room at St. Clair Hospital. Left arm wrapped and slinged, mom scrawling her family history half aloud. Up against a receptionist yawns in the buttery voice of a TV blonde ogling a colonial's oak beams. The office air does little to cool what can't be undone. The squalling call last Friday, the ambulance's angry red flash, the snap of a ring finger she still hears in her sleep. The surgeon details all the pins and screws to be sunk, the incision that'll fall where a gold band once swelled her knuckle, his shop talk, reminding me how it took both hands for Mom to mend what Dad wouldn't when he was in his cups, teaching me in the process how little holds for long. Lingering beneath its humming violet light, she combed his cluttered workbench, peeling parts from wrecked model planes, cobbling a tilting windmill from a yellow propeller and balsa scrap, the glue drying into pearls beneath a herd of toy box cows, grazing on a crayoned meadow, razored from another empty case of beer. Stooped now, she'll tread from PT toward the soft rumble of sliding doors, happy to unwind what sounds like a beloved bootleg, fragile on cassette. The rhapsody of that long ago day, warm as her water breaking at the five and dime. The whistle stop of a traffic cop playing over the tonic of Dad's sweet nothings, whispered as he must have on a gridlocked Hope Hollow road, where a siren's diminished fifth guides them towards my first breaths, coming in this place where her favorite story always ends with a pink-faced solo, never failing to find its bloom. Thank you, folks.